In your Bibles, please, for our New Testament reading to John chapter 13. John 13, verse 1, hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired Word of God. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. And supper being ended, the devil, having now put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he was come from God, and went to God, he riseth from supper, and laid aside his garments, and took a towel, and girded himself. After that he poureth water into a basin, and began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. Then cometh he to Simon Peter, and Peter saith unto him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet? Jesus answered and said unto him, What I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter. Peter saith unto him, Thou shalt never wash my feet. Jesus answered him, If I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. Simon Peter saith unto him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Jesus saith to him, He that is washed needeth not save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit. And ye are clean, but not all. For he knew who should betray him, therefore said he, Ye are not all clean. So after he had washed their feet, and had taken his garments, and was set down again, he said unto them, Know ye not what I have done to you? Ye call me Master and Lord, and ye say, Well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, ye also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that ye should do as I have done to you. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither he that is sent greater than he that sent him. If ye know these things, happy are ye if ye do them. I speak not of you all. I know whom I have chosen. But that the scripture may be fulfilled, He that eateth bread with me hath lifted up his heel against me. Now I tell you before it come, that when it is come to pass, ye may believe that I am he. Verily, verily, I say unto you, He that receiveth whomsoever I send, receiveth me. And he that receiveth me, receiveth him that sent me. When Jesus had said thus, he was troubled in spirit, and testified and said, Verily, verily, I say unto you that one of you shall betray me. Then the disciples looked one on another, doubting of whom he spake. Now there was leaning on Jesus' bosom one of his disciples whom Jesus loved. Simon Peter therefore beckoned to him that he should ask who it should be of whom he spake. He then, lying on Jesus' breast, saith unto him, Lord, who is it? Jesus answered, He it is to whom I shall give a sop, and when I have dipped it. And when he had dipped the sop, he gave it to Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon. And after the sop, Satan entered into him. Then said Jesus unto him, That thou doest, do quickly. Now no man at the table knew for what intent he spake this unto him. For some of them thought, because Judas had the bag, that Jesus had said unto him, Buy those things that we have need of against the feast, or that he should give something to the poor. He then, having received the sop, went immediately out, and it was night. Therefore, when he was gone out, Jesus said, Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God be glorified in him, God also shall glorify him in himself, and shall straightway glorify him. Little children, yet a little while I am with you. Ye shall seek me, and as I said unto the Jews, whither I go ye cannot come, so now I say to you. A new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another as I have loved you, that ye also love one another. By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one to another. Simon Peter saith unto him, Lord, whither goest thou? Jesus answered him, Whither I go, thou canst not follow me now, but thou shalt follow me afterwards. Peter said unto him, Lord, why cannot I follow thee now? I will lay down my life for thy sake. Jesus answered him, Wilt thou lay down thy life for my sake? Verily, verily I say unto thee, the cock shall not crow till thou hast denied me thrice. May God add his blessing to the reading and hearing of his most holy word. Okay, so a couple of things I'd like to talk about in this first section, 1 through 17. The first thing is that we read here Jesus knew that his hour was come, and that he should depart out of this world unto the Father. Having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. So there are two things there. I'll handle the second one first, and then the second one when we get to verse 3. Notice that it says here that he loved them unto the end. I think, if we would think about that, that's, if we don't understand it properly, it's kind of a no-brainer, you know. But there's something else I think that's being said there. He loved them unto the end, or he loved them for the purpose of what was coming, I think is really how we ought to understand that. In other words, that Jesus is going to the cross because he knows those whom he loves, and he loves them all the way to that cross, right? This is more a purposive statement of understanding here, that Jesus goes to the cross out of his great love for those whom are his. Okay? So that's the first point. The second point is, we want to see the confidence of Christ here and what that kind of confidence breeds. Notice it says, Jesus knew that his hour was come, he should depart out of this world and go into the Father. And then in verse 3 it says, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he was come from God and went to God. We talked earlier today about the fear of sons. And if we have that confidence in ourselves, it's going to direct a course of action that we go with forward. The same thing is true here of Christ. He has complete confidence in his Father, in his mission, in his love for his Father, and his Father's love for him. And so what he's about to do, while it may seem off to us or other or different from what Christ ought to do, with regard to Christ himself, this confidence breeds this particular service that he is about to give. Not many masters that you know, leaders that have disciples following them, would take off their clothes, put on a towel, and then begin wiping the feet of his disciples with that towel that he's wearing. This is a horribly humiliating thing to do, even in the ancient Near East. This says, I am a servant of servants. How can Christ do that? Only in the fact of his complete confidence in his mission, in his relationship to the Father, and in his Father's validation of his own earthly ministry. You see that? So what John does here is he sets this up. Jesus is XYZ, XYZ. He knows who he is. He knows that he has his Father's approval, that he is the beloved Son of his Father, that there's nothing that can hinder that relationship. And so he takes a towel and girds himself. Many of us, I dare to say, would be would be reluctant to do what Christ has done here, because we would think it is either, you know, it's untoward, it's beneath us, it gives the wrong, it sends the wrong message, so on and so forth. We can come up with all kinds of different reasons. But Jesus is confident, and it's that confidence that gives birth then to this kind of service that he gives here. And the object lesson that Christ gives here is exactly what the disciples need to hear, right? So he takes this towel, and towels of that day were, you know, not these fancy, colorful affairs that we have in our homes. They were generally a light color. They were made out of material that was lighter colored, like linen. And so when he girds this towel on, and then he begins to wash the disciples' feet, there is a transference of dirt that is palpable that ends up on the towel. And so the object lesson is clear that Jesus, and this is why this is not a sacrament, because it is performed by Jesus himself, and that defilement, that dirt that comes off of the feet of the disciples ends up on the towel that Christ is wearing. No one else can serve in that capacity. This is not a sacrament in that sense. That's why we don't do foot washings here. But it was appropriate for that day because Jesus is showing forth what he is about to do. He is about to take their sins upon himself and die on the cross. And so this is a wonderful object lesson showing that. Now we have two things with regard to Peter that we need to talk about. The first thing is that Peter has watched Jesus go around the room and wash several others' feet. And then when Jesus gets to Peter, he says, not here. May I say that Peter has imbibed in a kind of attitude that is not uncommon in the church. But just because it's not uncommon doesn't mean it's not untoward or sinful. And that is that Peter thinks he ought to get some special treatment. Everybody else has been washed, but I don't need that. Special treatment doesn't fit in covenant community, does it? Covenant community and special treatment are at opposite ends of the spectrum. The other thing that Peter does when Jesus says, if I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. Then he says, we haven't washed these guys enough. Make sure you get my hands in my head. And he's still stuck in that me mode. Right? He's still stuck in, I need a carve out here. I need something special for me. You remember the covenantal question that we must learn to ask ourselves, right? If everybody did what I'm about to do, or if everybody did what I'm doing right now, what would that look like in our fellowship? What would that look like in our church? Those are the kinds of questions that bring us back to a kind of covenantal mindset, which helps us to understand that as we come together, there are no special treatments or carve outs. Really, what there is a coming together as a covenant people, with all of the difficulties that entails, right? Because we do rub up against ourselves. Imperfect people, and we ourselves are imperfect. But there are things that we must learn to handle with one another and take care of with one another without carve-outs for each other or special handling or special treatment that we demand for ourselves. And so with Peter here, we see that kind of attitude. He separates himself from the rest. Oh, well, these guys just weren't smart enough to see what you were doing, or not spiritually aware enough. I don't need that washing. Oh, yes, you do. Well, then I need all of it. No, you don't. Kind of thing, right? So it's important then that we learn to behave ourselves, not in a kind of lockstep or rote fashion. Everybody's doing it, so I must be doing it. I must do it too. Let's all go off the cliff together. Not like that, but in the way that we understand what covenantal responsibilities are, and we refuse those kinds of special dispensations for ourselves. We ask ourselves the question, what if everyone did what I'm about to do? Right? So you get up in the morning, it's Sunday, it's the Lord's Day, and, you know, you're feeling a little bit tired. I don't want to go to church today, so I'm not going to. So you ask yourself that question, what if everybody did what I'm about to do? Right? Or as the pastor, right? I'm tired. I don't want to go to church today. What if everybody did what I'm about to do? Right? So we ask ourselves those questions to bring ourselves back to covenantal thinking instead of that separatistic sort of thinking. Then Jesus makes it clear what's going on here, that Jesus is setting out the example and he's teaching us two truths. He's teaching us justification and sanctification. Because Peter says, I need my head, my hands, and every part of me washed. And Jesus says, no, he that is washed, like you have already been, and like you all have already been disciples, he needs only to have his feet washed. Right? So there's a theological truth to be learned from that, that there is something that happens once in our lives, and that is that we are, quote, justified. We are made right with God through Jesus Christ by faith alone and not through our own works. But then we find also, don't we, that as we walk in this world, as we come in contact with this world, right, the part of the body that contacts the world is the feet, and that ends up with something on it that needs to be handled. And so there is this ongoing work of confession of sin and sanctification. So there is justification and there is sanctification. And both of these things are on display here in this object lesson of Christ's. And then the other object lesson is what? That he will take those sins to himself. That he will girt a towel and wipe the feet, and that dirt will then be upon him. Him who dies for us. Okay, so then, do you know what I've done for you? Then in verse 12, and Jesus teaches us then, this example of service. I'm going to say that Jesus taught us this, and so it is an example that we should serve one another, wash one another's feet, bear one another's burdens, and so on. And yet, I'm going to drop the other shoe and tell you that what Jesus does here as an example can never even be approached by any of us. Because Jesus is holy, harmless, undefiled, and separate from sinners. Jesus is walking perfection, walking holiness, walking sinlessness. None of us will ever be able to follow the example to the extent that Christ has exhibited that example here. Let us make sure that we remember that also. This is not just, you know, Jesus is a really good way-shower kind of thing. Let's remember who it is that is girt a towel. Let's remember John's introduction of Jesus as he girds that towel, right? That he has come from the Father, that he will return to the Father, that he is that holy, harmless, and undefiled one, that he is about to satisfy for the sins of his people, that he has come out of ivory palaces into this world, into this place of corruption and defilement, himself remaining free from that corruption and defilement. It is that one that has taken a towel and put it around him and then wiped the dirt off of the disciples' feet and put that on the towel that he's wearing. So while it is an example, it is something truly, if we would stop and meditate about it, it will indeed raise up our affection toward Christ, who is indeed far beyond anything that we could ever example in even washing each other's feet. Right? So we want to remember that as well. And we want our affection toward Christ to be inflamed by, or brought to boiling, if you will, by such an example as this. All right. And then Jesus says this, if you will do this one for another, if you will serve one another in this way, if you know these things, happy are ye if you do them. It's an interesting thing, isn't it? We think that we'll be happier if people serve us. That's the opposite of what Jesus says here. Jesus says, if you know these things, what? That I have given you an example of service so that you might serve one another. You'll be happy if you do them. Right? Very often we find ourselves, say, depressed, we'll be morose, right? And what will happen? People will be serving us, and people will serve us, and it'll be a moderate, at least, encouragement to us. But many times we will find that we will do much better if we begin serving others rather than focusing on ourselves. This is what Jesus says here. Happy are ye if you do these things. All right, so now we come to verse 18, and we speak about Judas Iscariot. Notice also that Jesus says that one of you shall betray me. I don't know about you, but it is indeed a marvel of the patience of Christ that it is only that only in the very end that Judas goes out from Christ. That traitor, that thief, that pilferer, that covetous one, Jesus has him with him all the way until the end of his ministry on earth. Isn't this a testament to the patience of Christ? Okay, so this also is very important for us to remember, that the traitor was also there to the very end. He is the son of perdition. He will be judged. It would be better for him, Christ says, if he had not been born. He is not an object of Christ's failed love or anything like that. And yet, Jesus has him with him until the end. Right? Well, the patience of our Lord Jesus Christ is something that is there for us to marvel about. Okay, so the disciples here at this point, it doesn't say it in John's gospel, but it does say it in the other accounts, that they are asking the Lord, "Is it I?" And I think that's a marvelous testament to the advancement of the disciples, because they were just a little while earlier arguing who's going to be the greatest. Now, when it comes to who's going to betray me, they're wondering if it's themselves, rather than saying, "Oh, I know who it is. It's obviously him." Right? And so what do we have there? We have, this is a very, it's a somber, it's a teachable moment. And so this seems to me to be the impetus for the upper room discourse, that these men are evincing themselves to be eminently teachable at this point. They are humble. They are ready to hear. And so Christ is going to go on for several chapters now, and they're not short chapters. And he will talk to them about what they need to know, because he's going to the cross. So then after Judas has gone out in verse 31, now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. And when we hear statements like that, we want to remember that Jesus is affirming his deity. God's glorified and I'm glorified. Right? There's no difference in the glory here that Jesus and the Father receive. This is a statement of the deity of Christ. Now he will say, "A little while I am with you, you shall seek me. And as I said to the Jews, whither I go, you cannot come. So now I say to you." Well, it's obvious, isn't it, that where Jesus is about to go, no one can go with him. He's the only one capable of doing what he is about to do. The mightiest of angels and the holiest of men would wither under what Jesus is about to endure. There is no created being that can follow Christ in what he's doing here. He said, "Follow me in my service, but you can't follow me here. This is mine. This is mine alone. I have tread the winepress alone," is how the prophet Isaiah puts it. So then he will say, "A new commandment I give unto you." And yet when we hear that, "a new commandment," let's remember that there are some groups that have taken that to seed. And they've said that, you know, that that the Mosaic law is now passed away. And now we have this new commandment from Christ. John, the disciple that wrote this gospel, will comment on that in the first chapter of 1 John. And he will, or, well, no, it's not the first chapter, sorry, but in the book of 1 John, I don't remember which chapter, he will say that we have this new commandment, but it's not a new commandment. It's the same commandment that we have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. Jesus says it's a new commandment because he will add this word to it, "as I have loved you." And yet it is the same commandment, that we love the Lord our God with our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and our neighbor as ourselves. This is the summary of the moral law, the Ten Commandments of which is another summary, a different summary. But it's the summary of the same law. So it's not a new commandment in that it has never been advertised before. It has never been commanded before. It is new now in that it is put into the context of Jesus' sacrificial work for his own. It's put into that context. And so loving one another is now permanently stamped with that indelible mark of sacrificial service one for another. But it's not new in the sense of absolute newness. All right, so then we have the statement of Peter, right, with regard to that he will die if necessary for thy sake, he says. And Jesus says, no, you won't, Peter. And so we have Peter, a couple times in this passage teaching us that sometimes it's better to be silent than to speak out. Sometimes it's better in a greater way to measure our words before simply coming out with them, to think about what we're about to say and to measure our words. Peter spoke precipitously here, and he also spoke precipitously when Jesus was washing the disciples' feet. But we love Peter for that. You know, we understand that there are different personalities even within the circle of the 11 here. And yet, we also want to recognize that we have been told and will be told, Lord willing, as we continue on in the Proverbs, that how we use our words is an extremely important spiritual barometer, that window into our souls. So let us be careful how we use our words. And let us also remember that it is easy when times are more peaceful to make those greater commitments. And so let us make sure like Solomon will say in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, God is in heaven, you are upon earth, therefore let your words be few. All right? Well, let's stand and call upon the Lord in prayer.